I told the council, I think we should do a strategic plan. And they, of course, said, what is that? I said, we got to do a vision and mission, and then we'll set some goals. And they said, well, we have goals. You already got goals from us, so we don't want to do it. And I said, okay, we're going to do it in the organization. And so we did, and we came up with the poster, which was the vision, mission, and values, which was distributed citywide and adhered to. And we came up with our mission, and I'll tell you how powerful it was, because imagine before this mission statement, everybody's doing their thing. They all think they're great at it. They think they're doing the right thing. We all do. Mm-hmm. And we probably were doing pretty well. The mission statement was something to the effect, the city of Carlsbad will provide top quality public services and goods to all who live, work, and play in our community. All who live, work, and play in our community. Ah, okay. What's the operative term in there? What's the reason then that we exist, and what changed as a result of that mission from what was going on before? I found out when they sent the budget requests in the following year, top quality. That was the strategic intent at that point on the service level. And if I was going to have any credibility, I had to honor that. I couldn't just blow it off. But we also got to measure against that. And so while the charter says we're going to provide the service and do these kind of things, the level of service, the reason you exist as an organization, is not always apparent. And so it's a focusing mechanism for everybody to make decisions on and to resource as you move downstream with whatever you're doing.
Today on PCC Local Time, we welcome back Ray Patchett, the former city manager of Carlsbad, California, and now consultant to leadership teams. Ray brings a wealth of knowledge and insights into the organizational principles of city management and teams. I asked Ray to take a deeper dive into his 8 traits of high-performing teams, which will soon be out in published form. What stands out to me about Ray is his practical application of theory, direct approach, and insightful understanding of the city manager's role. Our interview starts by exploring the concepts that influenced his development of these 8 traits and concludes with a brief discussion of each trait. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you like what you hear today, sign up for the PCC Local Time newsletter to get an email in your box every Friday with resources like this. Check the show notes for a link. Now, off we go.
The genesis of my book actually came from the library, state library training arm, asking me to do a workshop on group dynamics. And in my mind, I converted that to team building. And so I did the workshop on team building. But what they really wanted was group dynamics. And that went fine. Everybody was happy with that except me. But I did say to myself, I could write a book based on this structure. I'm going to do it. And so that's why I started this journey.
I have some questions. One of them relates to something you just said. What is the difference between a group and a team?
Synergy. Creating more with same or less resources than a group. Everything is a group, but not all groups are teams. Teams are those which rise to a level where they create greater than with equal or lesser resources, synergy. At least that's my definition.
And so the effort to develop a team is intentional, because I think where I am coming from today is thinking about managers who have a group of department directors and they get together on a fairly regular basis. But my sense is that there isn't always a clear idea of what it is that the manager does or thinks about to move them from a group to a team that is driven by mission or other
high performance goals. And synergy, right?
And is it intentional in your mind, right? A manager is going to think about what they want or what they envision for that team, as opposed to looking at individual functional, as we refer to silos, that there's the stage that I often see managers at that I'll work with them is working across the silos. So we say, let's take this performance challenge to your team so that there isn't just what five different departments are doing, but there's a unified idea of what the manager wants to move towards based on mission or vision.
Sit in my city manager's chair with me.
Okay.
Okay. So what mindset do we city managers hold? I don't know what all hold, but the one I hold is that as I look into the organization, it needs to be a team of teams, not a team. It needs to be that, but it needs to be a team of teams because the mission of those various silos, as you call them, departments, are all different. They all have different purposes and missions. Police department missions are different than the recreation department's, a little different than the finance department. But each one of those departments or silos also needs to become a team, not just a group. And so the distinction between a group and a team is an important one. So I'm glad you're talking about it with them, because we referred to my leadership team, which was made up of all the police chief, the fire chief, the community development director, the assistant city manager, the deputy city manager, all that cast as a leadership team. And in most cases, that group of people that you talked about and I'm telling you about now are unclear on what their mission is. And the leadership team, in my mind, mission is to coordinate and craft organizational policies to help it perform better. It has to become a team, a cross-functional team is what it is. Mm-hmm. And then let's take the police chief. The police chief knows needs to go back and, or the library director wasn't on my leadership team, but he or she has to go back and organize their group, their team, into a mission of public safety, however they craft their mission statement. And then drive all their decisions around delivering on that mission in concert with the city's overall, which would probably be the city council's mission. And I was just playing with that because I just reread my entire draft book. And one of the things I realized was I forgot to put in a vision process under the first trait of great high-performing teams, and that was to set the course and stay on course. And so to do that, you need to get clear about your mission. And I do mission first. I'd be curious about your observations, your visions, and I use SMART goals because I don't like complex systems. I like keep everything simple because if it gets too complex, it collapses of its own weight. My first strategic plan was like 2 8.5 by 8, one big poster with the vision, mission, and values that went up throughout the city, and 2 pages of things that we wanted to do, essentially goals, very simple goals that we wanted to, but they were, some of them were big, build a 70,000 square foot building for the staff because we were packed in the old city hall like sardines, which is okay if you're a sardine, but not if you have a bunch of people trying to do their job. For me, it's an going back to the top. As you sit in the city manager's chair, he or she sees a bunch of disparate departments. They're all with different purposes, although they need to collaborate and contribute to the better good, the whole good, the common good, the greater good, whatever you want to call it. And so the manager needs to build his or her team and hopefully support the different directors growing their groups into teams of high performers as well. So I think Stanley McChrystal has done some of the best thinking about team of teams. And I actually used one of his videos with one of my clients some couple of years ago, because he explained what he thought team of teams was. So even if it's not directly attributable or applicable because of the mission difference, the organizational application is pretty right on.
I'd like to just float a quote by you from Peter Hawkins, who is a systems coach. He thinks of his work with organizations. He is getting them to focus on the whole organization or the whole system, that he's not just working for the board or not just working for the executives. And one of his quotes, which brings to mind some ideas or thoughts that I'm wondering if it does you, he says, the mission creates the team, not the other way around. And I wonder what you make of that. What just comes to my mind is this idea that you convene a team to figure out the mission, as opposed to the team discover or uncover or discern mission. And it also brings to mind this idea of creeping mission. In other words, you get a team going, you don't know what I'm talking about, you're nodding your head, but you get a team moving in a direction, suddenly a mission appears that, and they think that's the mission. So you have to really be, I'll put this back in the city manager's lap, you have to, as a leader, have an idea of where that mission is going to come from or how it's going to be.
Share with me his quote again.
His quote is, the mission creates the team, not the other way around.
Right. Yes, and I think you could say it the other way around and be just as correct. The team creates the mission, except for this. Now let's go back to the city manager's chair.
Yeah.
And you've heard me say stuff like this before. Most of the structure and the mission for municipal organizations established in the charter of the community, most of us come in and the organization is largely delivering on that mission. What most of the local government organizations haven't done is clarify that mission in an operational way. For example, I told the council, I think we should do a strategic plan. And they, of course, said, what is that? I said, we got to do a vision and mission, and then we'll set some goals. And they said, well, we have goals. You already got goals from us, so we don't want to do it. I said, okay. We're going to do it in the organization. And so we did, and we came up with the poster, which was the vision, mission, and values, which was distributed citywide and adhered to. And we came up with our mission, and I'll tell you how powerful it was, because imagine before this mission statement, everybody's doing their thing. They all think they're great at it. They think they're doing the right thing. We all do. Mm-hmm. And we probably were doing pretty well. The mission statement was something to the effect, the city of Carlsbad will provide top quality public services and goods to all who live, work, and play in our community. All who live, work, and play in our community. Ah, okay. What's the operative term in there? What's the reason then that we exist, and what changed as a result of that mission from what was going on before? I found out when they sent the budget requests in the following year, top quality. That was the strategic intent at that point on the service level. And if I was going to have any credibility, I had to honor that. I couldn't just blow it off. But we also got to measure against that. And so while the charter says we're going to provide the service and do these kind of things, the level of service, the reason you exist as an organization is not always apparent. And so it's a focusing mechanism for everybody to make decisions on and to resource as you move downstream with whatever you're doing.
Yeah, I think this idea of getting clear about the mission is probably, in terms of your first trait and the teams, set the course and stay on course. It, to me, looks like a participatory process, that there isn't just, it's not happening in one place. It's not happening in the city manager's office. It's happening in a broader context. And also, I think you might say that it is not evolving so much as being understood in new ways.
I think that's right. I would agree with that. Yeah, that's a nice way to put it.
Yeah.
You're in the public arena. You see all these agencies. They're all out there working their butts off.
Yeah.
What are they doing for us? Because that's their job.
Right. Yeah. And it can get very blurry sometimes in all organizations, I'm sure, but certainly in local government, it can feel sometimes like we've been asked to do so much more than what we understood are essential service and mission to be.
Right.
And is that okay? And what is it exactly that is happening here?
That's a great question, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think this might be a good time to introduce another question that has to do with the role of city manager and how you see yourself as a facilitator in that city manager role. And then you've also moved on to your consultant role. You may actually see yourself as facilitator more than consultant at times. I know I do. Those are two roles that I may lean towards one or the other. But in terms of city manager, are there times when you are the facilitator and times when you might consider being in an external facilitator? And what would be the difference?
Let's see. That's a good one. And I addressed that in my book. But I saw my leadership role as an educator, coach, and facilitator mostly. That doesn't mean I wasn't and didn't say, now here, this is what's going to happen. I did from time to time. Especially in emergencies, I would take advice and then give people the green light, usually for what they were suggesting. And so nobody would accuse me of being a snowflake in that sense. They knew that if Ray wants to get direct, he definitely knows how to do that. But it's interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. Sometimes in the workshops with this executive team I'm working with now, it feels just like when I was a city manager. In terms of facilitating. And so I think it oscillates depending on the topic. And we can consciously or maybe unconsciously choose what mode of leadership we want to use. As a consultant, I don't know if I ever felt like I was much of a consultant. But when would I bring in a consultant? Anytime I run in consultants to work with my leadership team. It's hard for me as the CM to see the contribution that I'm making to the functioning of the group. It's up to the external to look and hear. Because you, as you know, and I do, having served in my role as a consultant, after having said all that, people tell you everything. Just they spill it out. They let it out. And so as a consultant, we'll hear more than I would ever hear as the city manager. There's just this bag of don't tell the city manager hung over every city manager's shoulder. And sometimes that's a good thing because sometimes when they tell you stuff, you can't ignore it. You have to do something. And sometimes it's better not to deal with some things. And that's part of the art is knowing the difference. This is a really simple example of somebody that followed me as city manager here. And there had been a terrible incident where 5 or 6 firefighters had been killed in an incident. And the fire department, of course, we have 6 fire stations and crews and all of that, and paramedics. We have it's a full service city. They felt like the flags should be flown at half mast. I don't remember what the code is about that or the law, but actually, the lady that followed me was just taking all kinds of incoming. And she called me and she said, Ray, what are you going to do? What should I do? And I said, first thing you should do is forget about the law, lower the damn flags. She said, well, that's what nobody declared. And I said, you can do it. It doesn't matter. Sometimes you do the right thing. And then if you need to ask for forgiveness on that one, do. Say, oh gosh, sorry. Nobody's going to give you hell about that. Who sent the Navy fleet halfway across the world? Wasn't it Roosevelt? Didn't have enough money to get them back? What's Congress going to do? So sometimes you just have to do that stuff. But I used external facilitators. I got to the point where, because I had my OD background, I knew what some of them brought to the table. And sometimes I chose them or suggested them very strategically because I knew what they would bring.
I think about just day-to-day, the facilitation skills would advance this mindset of team. I have a quote here from the ICA, which is International Group.
Cultural Affairs?
Yes. You know who that is. Well, they have a nice definition here that's very simple. It says, at the core, a facilitator takes responsibility to plan and manage the process that will help a group to achieve their goals. And if you're working with your team, you're going to be thinking about those processes. However, if you are working on a strategic plan, for instance, it may be that the city manager needs to be more actively listening, observing, and maybe even speaking to some of the issues. And that kind of energy and attention, you cannot do at the same time that you're focused on facilitation. So
I think it's a partnership in a way, because as you're saying that, I'm thinking about, even if I'm facilitating, there is a role for me as a city manager, not as a consultant or facilitator. One of the traits I talk about of great teams is that leaders empower others and manage for results. An application of that is every year during the setting up the guidelines for preparation of the annual budget, I would meet with my LT and I would tell them, these are the three things or two things or five things that I want in here. And I might know that because I want it. I might know it because of the council. I might just sense it based on our annual survey that we need to do something with that. These five things have got to be in there. After that, everything's got to drive toward the mission.
That's good.
So that's what empower others and manage for results is. If you're empowering others, you have to set some guardrails out there. You can't just let them wander around the universe. Now, that's hard for leaders because mostly we don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Ray, I know you're going to walk us through these traits, and I wonder just to say a little bit more about your book.
This is written for city managers, ACMs, department heads, wannabe department heads and city managers, municipal management assistants, all the people that are trying to get into city management. And it serves them all well. And candidly, I think it probably works on all organizations. But the target audience that I wrote to and from was people like me and people that want to be city managers. And it's the integration of three things, I think. 34 years of experience in local government, 20 plus as a city manager, five or six as an ACM type in my consultant years. So now I'm outside the system looking back in them and getting a different view from that, which is really interesting and very educational, actually. And then the OD processes and learning foundation I have from all of that. And I think the fourth is a systemic to the whole piece is my leadership philosophy on how to lead an organization. For example, the whole point of empowerment, lots of people talk about it, but most organizations are still hierarchies and they're still pretty boss-centered, and that's fine. They need to be in some instances, but that's a leadership philosophy as much as anything else in my mind.
I like the first part of the book in terms of breaking out what each of these traits are, because this gets at the fuzziness that even the words high-performing, I feel, can be fuzzy. So I like this idea that you really break it down and talk about how to think from that city manager perspective about what's driving this process of building a team, a high-performing team.
Yeah. I vacillate between it's a bunch of garbage to it's really good.
I think that's natural. We're probably, this could even be a premature talk, but I'm actually glad we're having it so that we can come back and revisit it when the book is out. But I think this will generate interest. And if you want to, just briefly, we can walk through these eight traits and see what comes up.
Okay, I wrestled with what to call them, traits, habits, qualities, characteristics, attributes, and all of that. And candidly, I think I've said to you before, all organizations are human organizations, and they operate, have a psyche, culture, and they have functionality and dysfunctionality. And so I thought traits was fine in final analysis, not to mention the fact that it rhymes with eight.
Yeah, I like that. I do think of them each as a practice as well. Yeah. So you have it laid out as traits, practices, and the sort of benefits or results that comes from that.
That will stay. Yes, that's how it is. And it's largely the same. So we can talk about whatever you want.
Okay. But you mentioned the first one as set the course and stay on course, which is very related to mission, getting clear about the mission.
Yes.
And two, shape and energize the right culture.
Yes.
Yes. What does that mean to you, and Brie?
It's interesting because we talk about culture in organizations. You hear it all the time, and usually people don't know what they're talking about. And it actually usually plays out as we're going to do a reorganization, or somebody's getting fired, or we're hiring somebody new. It's usually that. But 10, 12 years ago, this organization had done a cultural assessment of their organization. They had a psychologist come in and do it. And that was great, except he didn't know how to do anything with it once he had the data. So they said, "Hey, Ray, do you know how to do something with this?" And I said, "Sure." And that I said, "I can do something with it." And that's Peter Block's fault, because he always says the answer to how is yes. So I called my wife on the way home. I said, "I just jumped off into the pool. I don't know a damn thing about what they're talking about. So I better find out."
And to our friend Peter Block, we can always give that quote I love of his, that the question is the methodology, and you know how to ask questions.
Yes, so we do.
You could do just about anything with that skill.
What we did is I went and learned a lot about culture, and I've continued a lot. I think it's one of the more interesting topics I've ever dove into. And I'll cut through a lot of the history and the stories from the past, but basically there are different culture types depending on the business you're in, the reason the business exists, the mission of the business, right? And local governments and bureau and agencies, whether it's a water agency, a park agency, whatever they are, they're all basically bureaucratic hierarchies. That's what they are. So I've coined a term in my book called bureaucracy, B-U-R-E-A-R-C-H-Y, because I wanted that. Val didn't want bureaucracy in there. And then a friend of mine who is one of the guys that contributes to public management, Ed Everett, when I told him that, Ed is very four-letter word oriented. And so after about 5 minutes of four-letter words about you got to take bureaucratic out of there, I said, "I would, Ed, except that's what it is." And so I can't deny it. So then I looked up hierarchy again, and really, they're broadly the same. So I could have used hierarchy, but then I asked, what am I going to do with bureaucracy, bureaucratic cultures? So I decided I'll just bring them together. Has anybody done that? I don't know, and I don't care. That's what I did. So I call it the ideal local government culture in my mind is a bureaucracy clan culture, because when you look at every one of our organizations, if they don't say they're a family, I would be shocked. At some level, we just are all the characteristics of a clan culture, because we stay there a long time. We build on consensus. We work hard together. We just live together for 20, 30 years. And so we're a clan. And those are the two dominant cultures, the bureaucracy and the clan culture. And my bias is to supplement and enrich those cultural typologies with a public service and learning culture. Public service, because when you call people or when you help people understand they've been called to serve, whether they knew it or not, they will walk over hot coals to take care of whoever they're dealing with when they see that's their mission. Their job becomes more than just a job. It becomes their purpose in life, their calling. And I've seen people, I saw one of our public works guys on a big sewage spill here we have, and the sewage in the containment area was like 3 or 4 feet deep. And there's a valve in that water. Now, spill is occurring right now. Yeah. And we don't have time in his mind to wait because it's filling up the lagoon. When he goes in there, finds the valve, and turns off whatever that valve was and it comes up. And I'm like, get him to a shower.
Yeah.
He's got to get cleaned up. He was a great guy. He died a few years ago of cancer, unfortunately, but that's the kind of example or all of that. And so that whole service calling, public service, is a big theme. And I've shared with you, I read stories at the onboarding process to help people understand what they had been brought here to do. And then the learning is basically a lot about what Peter Senge wrote and many years ago, 20, 30 years ago. And I figured that if we wanted to modernize and improve public services and goods, we needed to help people learn different ways of seeing things. And so that's what the whole purpose of the learning subcultures are. So a bureaucracy, clan culture enriched by public service and learning culture. And so in it, I've included some behaviors that leaders can use.
Talk now about setting the course, staying on course, shape and energizing the right culture. Number three is having the right people on the team.
Without saying, you got to have the right people with knowledge, skills, abilities, and competencies, and got to employ and engage the right people to generate success.
And right there, we could take a deep dive on how difficult that can be for a lot of managers that come in and fear that they don't have the right people on the team.
Most of us inherit our team. I didn't have all people that I had hired until about the last 2 years of my tenure. That's not very long. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. You can fire them, but really?
Yeah. Right. So you're not going to do that. I don't know of any manager that considers that to be a good option.
Not in our environment.
No, not in your environment. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, have the right people on the team goes without saying, right? And you just make sure they have the skills and competencies needed, and you ensure that their roles and responsibilities are clear. Because when they're not, people compete. A lot of dysfunction occurs.
And what about number four, empowering others to manage the results?
Manage for results. Yeah, we've already talked about that. But the whole notion around that is you give the people closest to the resident or the customer to act, the power to act. And this was a fun one to write because this was the whole point about being clear in your own mind as a manager what the parameters are within which they can act and then supporting it. And you have to have a high level of trust in your folks to do that. So. Mm-hmm. That's what that one's about.
And then we have number five. What would you say about ground rules?
You know, there's just all kinds of how you're going to make decisions, how are you going to resolve conflicts, all those kinds of questions. How are you going to communicate? If I send you a text at midnight, are you expected to respond on Sunday? I would never do that to somebody unless it was an absolute emergency. And if it really was an emergency, I'd call them. Or go get them if it was that bad. Trust others and intentionally build healthy relationships. It's all about building healthy professional relationships. And if you aren't able to do that, then there's a good chance that you're not going to be able to perform at the highest levels. So you got to do things to foster trust in people. You got to help people learn to collaborate and cooperate. And most importantly, if I say communicate, and manage conflict, because there will be conflict. However, manage conflict will determine how well the team functions. Because there is conflict. Some people call it storming, like Tuckman, but there will be conflict. And number seven is focus on results and regularly track progress. This is the manager in me. None of us got hired just to show up and be pretty. We got to get stuff done. And if you track stuff, you set goals, you demonstrate results and effectiveness, you can get stuff accomplished. If you don't, you'll get moved on. And that's no fun.
I'm wondering if it's in this area that you get into resistance in the group. Again, kind of a normal stage in the group process is finding a kind of ways to not move forward. We can't do this because...
Yeah, I'm not real good on resistance because if somebody told me he couldn't do something, I'd listen to him. But as a general rule, I'd say, look, give me three ways to do it, and then we'll talk about whether we're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And that becomes a power issue. Mm-hmm. If you really want it done, you're going to tell them, do it, or I'll get somebody to do it. City managers a lot are usually like steel beams wrapped in cotton. They come across soft, but inside, they know they've got to get stuff done and they're on the line for getting stuff done.
Right. I wonder, too, if managers are always prepared when they've set the course and now they're managing for results. If you have someone who inside does not feel they have the capacity or just don't have the skill level, and it may be a lack of confidence or it could be a real gap in terms of their skills. Do we need to take some other steps or interventions to more accurately assess if that resistance is based on not wanting to move forward because it's just a natural sense of not wanting change, or is it actually because there's an internal sense of, I can't do this. I'm going to be found out.
The answer to all those is yes. It just really depends. If you've got somebody that is just resisting and they can do it, that's one path. If you've got somebody that just really unsure, you can process that with them and find out what is it you're uncomfortable with, and maybe we can get some help with that. Or if they really are just not prepared to do it, you don't want to put them in a situation to fail.
Yeah.
And usually they'll tell you they need to hand it off. It's not like they won't tell you.
Yeah.
If they have people that don't trust. Want to fail.
No, I think if you have, that's part of the team building. It's learning to trust, to have that conversation. I'm not actually sure what this looks like, or I am fearful that XYZ might happen if I do this.
It's important data.
Yeah, it is. But it never happens unless you have somebody in that role of leader to actually put some weight into that direction to say, this is what we're going to do, or this is the direction we're going. And that can be like, oh, now I don't really have a choice. I've really got to put myself out there.
That's part of the art of being a leader, is you have to judge, is this person going to be okay getting this done? And is this a development process? And how high are the stakes? When I put together the Lego team, I didn't go to my junior accountant, junior planner, or junior communications person. I went to the top ones because we're competing in a worldwide competition. And so that's who I selected to be on that team. Mm-hmm. I had no doubt that they could do it, yeah, or they knew how to get it done.
But now, some managers too, Gray, they have to be prepared. And I think you've spoken to this once or twice before. They have to be prepared that if there is pushback from the community, from the elected officials, that you're not going to leave them or throw them under the bus, that there has to be enough trust that if they get pushed out there in a direction that is uncomfortable, that there is some
support.
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on what the topic is, of course. And so there's always going to be criticism, sometimes from the council, and you and I have talked about this in terms of being professional versus political. And as long as they've stayed out of politics and stayed politically neutral publicly, then I would support them. But if they had gotten themselves involved in council elections or something like that, first of all, if I knew that, I probably wouldn't put them in a public assignment or allow it. Because you make those hard decisions sometimes, and that's part of what you get paid for. That because you don't want to put the council in a bad position. Like I had that capital projects guy that got involved in a school board race, and the school board's not part of cities in California. They are a special district all to themselves. And his wife was a teacher, and he got all involved in this school district campaign. And first thing's happening, I've got 3 or 4 council members coming into my office saying, what's going on? I don't know. What's going on? Tell me. He didn't get to go to council for a couple of years.
Wow.
But I reminded them that, first of all, it wasn't in Carlsbad. And 2, he is a citizen. He gets to do what he wants. But as I tell people, I told the librarians at a talk I did for the state library gathering that some of them they have strong feelings often about social matters that they post online. And I told them, you can post anything you want. That's your right. But this, let me tell you, from having sat where I did, it does have an impact on what happens to your department.
Yeah.
It makes it harder for people like me to get you what you need. And I can tell you, we had a fire chief that got involved a little bit in that stuff. And a lot. The union went after the mayor, iconic mayor. He was mayor 25 years. And I could get the council to move on a ladder truck for about 3 or 4 years. They weren't going to do it. They never said it publicly. They would never say it publicly.
Yeah.
And tell them, we're going to put a fire ladder truck in there. Okay, we're going to take it out.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to embarrass the council. I didn't want to foster the problem.
Yeah. I think about just this topic of resilience, and you bring up this point of the importance of staying really professionally focused and not political. One of the areas of feedback that we got from that study that we introduced at the conference is that oftentimes the problems that are mostly the cluster of narratives that we received were about the elected officials. Over here, when we looked at, is it more about rules, processes, and procedures? If you did more of that, would it solve the problem? Or is it more about behaviors? In other words, behaviors are things that we don't really have control over, but we have control over rules, processes, and procedures. All the responses were on the behavior side. And it was because what they said in their narratives is that the rules, processes, and procedures, when it comes to politics, they don't matter because people will just ignore them in favor of acting in a way that's political and not necessarily in that professional realm. I think that's
sounds right.
Yeah.
I saved, hold on, let me get this. I actually have kept this because I thought of you when I read it, and it's right here. I know exactly where it is.
You take your time.
This is by the, this is in Public Management. I don't exactly know when it was. Oh, October 23 version. And it's Jessica Cowles, who is now the ethics director at ICMA, mm-hmm. wrote, there's always an election somewhere. So there's always politics somewhere, huh? And this goes through and it says the ethical obligation to be politically neutral in an era of perpetual election cycle. And I don't have, I guess I just kept the title, but it's a discussion on this point of how to deal with politics as a city manager profession. And so
it's a good topic. I think there are some strong feelings around this that does make me think that some good discussion and dialogue make it a little more accessible, and particularly this day and age when we are so polarized and things are easily politicized.
It's a choice, right? It's like one of those spectrums or polarities that, or continuums of politics and professionalism. And if you choose to take a position in the role of city management, you're choosing professionalism over being political in a public arena. You can still do all you want privately in terms of voting and what have you. But if you get involved in it, now you're creating questions around your professionalism. And people always find out. That's the way it works.
Yeah.
There's nothing secret.
Yeah.
Anyway, day trade is, I debated, just close out on this, I debate about not even including the eighth trait, which is use broad flexible guidelines to produce superior results effectively. And the reason I included it is because all those systems and processes are lateral systems and processes that affect every aspect of the organization's performance. All you have to do is talk to somebody about a difficult purchasing department. And in fact, I just talked to a guy I play golf with sometimes who left the city of San Diego Water because he's running a billion-dollar project and he can't get stuck through the purchasing department. It's ridiculous. That's why it's included.
That is, I think, I like this idea that there is some flexibility within the broader framework to get closer to, you know, as you iterate, let's just say, as you iterate the implementation of a particular goal, that there is a sense of oh, we need to shift this way, or we need to shift another way to get this closer to that end result.
Yeah. You have to adapt it all the time. If you're rigid in your thinking, it'll work for a while.
Yeah.
What happens to rigid things? They typically break. Flexible things get too flexible, then they're wishy-washy. It's finding the balance.
When you are with a group and you are perhaps engaging them in some team development, are there any particular questions that you like to ask the group to get a sense of where they are at with their team, let's say, thinking.
Yeah, but I always start with a neutral question because I don't want to forecast that they're great or they're dysfunctional. I'll say if I'm meeting with an individual, I'm doing a breakout interview with each of the team members on the LT. Hey, how's it going? A little small chit chat. And then, so what's the world like? What's going on? And then I listen. And then so, they'll pick a path. Well, you can't believe what he or she is doing. It's unbelievable. Okay. Now I know where we're going with that. Mm-hmm. Oh, everything here is great. Okay. I accept that. And I'll take that path for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I'll ask the second question. What would improve it? Because I'm not asking. There's no shortage of problems in anything. And if you ask about problems, people will have a gazillion problems that they can identify, but that may not be the point. So I'll find out what would make it better.
Yeah. So you're opening up the opportunity for them to put forward what is top of their minds in terms of what is, if it's not working or it could be done different. And
they know what they want to say to you because they've thought about it. Meeting schedule, you're sitting down with them. It's just you and them generally. And they know what's going on. We don't. We have some observations if we've been able to sit there and watch a meeting or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But we've been presented problem in OD parlance, the reason we're there to do something like that. They wanted a strategic plan, but that's not really what they wanted. They wanted operations review. Mm-hmm. Well, those are very different in my mind.
Yeah, I thought that was a great opening today when we started the conversation. And as we think about it, as we wrap this up, it is important to get clear about what it is they are looking for. And I guess that would come out in your question as well. And I wonder if you do find that there's human dynamics issues happening.
Always.
And I guess I'd like to ask you, if you just let that play in the background, always aware of it, but you stay focused on what you presented today in terms of getting the team to focus rather than, say, addressing those human dynamic issues straight on. I think those are two different approaches.
That's the whole point about trust others and intentionally build healthy relationships. That's what's in there, all of that, including Tuckman stuff and managing interpersonal conflict and everything.
Does that mean that you would say you're in the first or second meeting with a group or team that you would say stop a group if you are finding that there's a particular dysfunction? The group has decided, the group has told you what they want to do, and now there's an energy saying, we can't do that, or they're taking you off on another tack, which wasn't what the group agreed they were going to do. Is that something that you're going to address, or are you going to use your authority, if you will, because you are the person that has been identified as there to help them move forward? Are you more likely to just stay focused on the task, stay focused on the shall we say, the agenda or the mission for that group?
Well, again, it's a continuum. There's the task process continuum, right? Even mm-hmm. for those of us consulting, right? So if our task is, let's say, to craft a mission statement, and we watch the process, the group dynamics process, and somebody is not paying attention or something, I probably would start, and I'm just making this up now, with, hey, what's going on? That's a gentle call out, right? Or if they persist, let's talk about what's going on, what's not working here. Let's figure this out, because we need to get this mission statement crafted, and not everybody is engaged. I try not to call them out directly in front of their colleagues because they're going to be defensive and they're going to resist it.
Yeah.
I might at a break coach talk with them and say something to the effect, I noticed these following behaviors and it's really working against the group's success. Do you have something you need to tell me?
Yeah.
I must always leave them with a question.
Yes. I like that. Yeah, I think it's just a matter of being creative or even agile in the moment to know the best call on that. But certainly,
I agree.
On the new groups, I like that you're not going to call them out right away. I think one of the typical responses I get is, this is the way, let me tell you the way it used to be, because the way we used to do it worked. the way we do it now doesn't work. And I'm an authority because I was there before. And so I need to tell people here at this table why things don't work now. Everybody has heard that how many times from this person. You have to figure out a way to kind of park it without rejecting them, but say there may be something in there that is a value and we can explore that at this other time. But right now here, this is what we're doing.
Right. There, at some point you draw the line. You have to. So yeah, that's nice. And it did. And now why don't you help us make sure that it works that well or better?
Yeah.
Because we got to move forward.
Yeah.
And I might do that privately. I might, if they were pushing back at me in a not nice way, I might do it publicly. I was working for a private sector company, a glass company, and I knew what the problem in the system was. I'd been able to interview them all, and it was partly the owner. And he got a call in the middle of us working on their mission statement specifically, and he just got up and walked out. Just left us all sitting there. He didn't say hello, goodbye, or anything. So when he came back, I said, so what's going on? He goes, what do you mean, what's going on? I said, what's going on? Because it was one of those, as a consultant, if I confront them, I'm risking the relationship, which was fine. I was willing to do that. And he said, nothing's going on. Then one of his staffers, one of his directors said, his question is what you did. You just walked out while we're right in the middle of the work we're doing. Oh, he didn't realize he had done it, he said. So he said, he apologized, said, sorry, it was the banker. Oh, we could have taken a break. It would have been fine.
It's really interesting.
Yeah. I got to the point where he had some personal and some professional decisions that he needed to make that unless he makes them, it'll be status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. They're doing okay status quo, but they're not going to get where he wants to get.
Yeah. What that makes me think of, Ray, is it goes back to building that safe space. Safe space is a loaded term these days, but seriously, in a group as they meet, that is an important element. It's going to be a place that you can openly address some.
I think all the business stuff you can wrestle with and argue and all that kind of stuff. But when it gets to the interpersonal and group dynamics, that gets a little treacherous.
Yeah. Fascinating. Ray, I'm really glad we were able to do this today, and I'm going to be interested to hear how things evolve with your book as it moves towards getting published. But these are really great conversations.
All right, you take care. Yell if you need some help. I'm happy to bounce things.
All right. Thank you very much, Ray. I appreciate it so much. It was good to see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.